listening experience for all participants. That way we can focus on Dr. Slocum's content and not struggle against the background noise of 300 attendees. Now, Paul is going to do question and answer, and you might have heard him say a couple times during the presentation. So please email your questions as you get them during his presentation to questions@ahaprocess.com. That's questions@ahaprocess.com. And we will try to address as many of those as we possibly can. Dr. Paul Slocum is from Pearland, Texas, and he has been a professional educator since the 60s. He's been a teacher, an administrator, an instructional supervisor, a curriculum director, a deputy superintendent for curriculum and instruction, and he's also done adjunct teaching at the graduate level. Paul holds his doctorate in education from the University of Houston, and he is currently writing and consulting full-time for AHA Process. And he provides topics of around identifying gifted students from poverty. He trains on a framework for understanding poverty, and he co-authored Removing the Mask, Giftedness in Poverty with Ruby Payne. And that book provides training on identifying and serving gifted students from poverty, as well as other gifted topics. But today, Paul is going to explore with us why boys account for a high amount of the discipline referrals in schools. And these discipline referrals constitute a large population of kids in special ed, Title I, and those who have reading and writing problems. So prepare yourself for this time with him as he gives you these tips on male behavior and what you can do to make your school more boy-friendly. And again, Paul will open it up for questions. So email your question to questions@ahaprocess.com. Paul?
Thank you, Ruth. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for your interest in this topic. Boys are certainly, well, I use the word crisis, and I don't use that lightly. Part of the issues surrounding this is actually connected to we currently have we have like 1.3 million men in prison to less than 100,000 U.S. And that's a real tragedy. When you look at boys and their relationships with fathers, it's not also very good. We know from the research that when you have fathers who are absent in the lives of boys, it ends up with depression, ends up in delinquency, drug abuse, all kinds of issues, and that's well grounded in the research. Fathers are a critical part. What makes all of that significant is when you have 1.3 million men in prison, that creates a lot of single moms raising kids. And I think if, usually what I ask teachers is how many of you have one or more students who have one or more parents incarcerated? And typically the hands are raised, especially if it's in an urban area, it is as high as 80%. So that's a real key issue. You also need to know that if you have a boy or a girl, but especially a boy, who has a parent in prison, you have a boy in pain. And yet they typically try and mask that pain. When you look at the types of offenses that are committed by males, in terms of violent offenses, black males lead that, followed by white males, followed by Hispanic. Property offenses, white males lead that, followed by black males, followed by Hispanic. Drug offenses, black males lead that, followed by white males, followed by Hispanic. Public order offenses, white males lead that, followed by black males, followed by Hispanic. When you look at geographic areas of the country, in terms of the incarceration of men, you're looking at the South as the leader in that, followed by the West, and the South is primarily a Texas statistic. Texas is number one in the country in the incarceration of males. It is number two in prison rate. In the West, that's primarily a California statistic. California has the highest number of men in prison of anyone in the country. and they are number two in the incarceration rate. Incarceration versus prison includes jail, prison, parole, and probation. The Midwest is third, and the lowest is actually in the Northeast. And that typically surprises people because typically when we think of the Northeast, we think of New York. But if you look at that whole New England coast, it gets very rural as you go up into Maine. By 20, we currently have November 2006, we had 7 million men who were either on probation, jail, prison, or parole. By 2010, it is projected to be 7.7 million people who have felony records. As of May 2008, that number hit 7.2. What makes that important is when you have 7.7 million people have felony records, it's more difficult to get employment. When it's more difficult to get employment, then typically you have financial problems in the home, you have social and emotional issues, and family structures tend to fall apart. And of course, all of that comes into the classroom. If you would put all 7.7 million of those Americans in one geographic location, it'd be the 13th largest state in the United States. We have 38 states that have fewer than 7 million people. The stats on boys are as follows. From elementary school to high school, boys typically receive lower grades than girls. Eighth grade boys are retained 50% more often than eighth grade girls. By the time they reach high school, boys account for two-thirds of the students in special ed. Your boys and girls now attend and graduate from college. 59% of all master's degree candidates are now female. Boys are up to 10 times more likely to suffer from hyperactivity than girls. 71% of all school suspensions are boys. Boys are 10 times more likely to be labeled ADD. 95% of all juvenile homicides are committed by boys. Boys are perpetrators in 4 out of every 5 crimes that end up in juvenile court. Males account for almost 9 out of every 10 alcohol and drug law violations. Suicide is the third leading cause of death among boys in their mid to late teens. Accidents and homicides are first and second. Boys are more likely than girls to face verbal abuse in the classroom. They're more likely to face verbal abuse in the home than their sisters are. Boys are 4 times more likely to be prescribed Ritalin or some other behavior-altering drug. Currently, we have over 4 million boys in this country on Ritalin. And boys are slower to develop impulse control than girls. 73% of all students labeled learning disabled are boys. 76% of all students labeled emotionally disturbed are boys. And every racial and ethnic group, women now outnumber males in the acquisition of college degrees. 133 females getting a BA to every 100 males. This is currently a 60-40 ratio of females to males at the University of North Carolina, Boston University, and New York University. That is also an international phenomenon. It's also true that females are outnumbering males in the acquisition of college degrees in the United Kingdom, in Australia, in the Caribbean, and in India. I think one of the real tragedies in all of this is that typically what we find is that schools are designed around the female brain. And it's become increasingly more so because of our heavy, heavy emphasis on academics. And that is something I think in education we're going to have to revisit at some point if we truly want to have the success rate with boys as we've had with girls. Certainly it's not that girls have arrived, but what's happening with boys typically is the brain is just wired differently, and our classrooms have become increasingly more pencil paper driven. It is come in, sit down, be quiet, and get to work. We have a lot to cover. We have a lot to do. We have elementary schools in this country who have now eliminated recess because we just don't have time. There's too much to do. We have schools who have eliminated art and music. Some of that is because of budget cuts. art and music are important parts for boys because it allows for movement, it allows for figural representations, which is a strength for boys. We have eliminated from the high schools many of the courses that were hands-on that attracted so many boys. And we've replaced all of that with heavy, heavy emphasis on reading and writing, and certainly math as well. But it's become very book-driven. And boys feel very, very frustrated and they're very trapped. What makes all of that, I think, particularly important is the default emotion for boys is anger. And when you have boys who get very frustrated in school environments and they feel trapped and penned in, then you often get certain kinds of behaviors. Add to that, that there are issues in the home life and you just have a very, very angry boy. I want to talk a little bit about the differences in the male and female brain. We have a body of research now that's emerged over the last 25 years because of SPECT scans and because of MRIs, and we can actually now look in the brain and see how males and females process that information. We can also look at the ADHD brain. We can look at the emotionally disturbed brain and see how they process information. What I'm going to be talking about here are basically patterns. And these are generalizations. They're patterns in male brain and female brains. About 90% of the population fall into these general patterns. However, you can be a female and have a male brain. You can also be a male and have a female brain. And that is not about sexual orientation. You can also have what is known as a split brain, about a 50-50, 60-40 male-female brain. But about 90% of the population fall into these general patterns. Males basically are very literal and objective. Females are approximate and subjective. If you ladies were to go to your husbands and say, honey, it sure would be nice if you made me feel special every once in a while, he would probably say, what do you mean? And you might respond, well, it'd be nice to get a card or some flowers every once in a while. You want flowers? What color? Well, it's not really about the color. Well, do you want flowers or don't you? Well, flowers would be nice. Then what color do you want? And of course, the next time you're ready to say, just forget it. Guys, you have to kind of spell it out. Females, on the other hand, are much more approximate and subjective. Males basically have a deductive brain, where females have an inductive brain. Males would much prefer being given the generalization or theory and then look for the examples. Guys are kind of into proving it. Females, on the other hand, tend to look at examples, and they tend to derive generalizations and theories from those. Males tend to be much more impulsive, they enjoy problem solving, and they are highly competitive. Females, on the other hand, tend to be less impulsive. They tend not to see everything as a problem to be solved, and females tend to be more cooperative than they are competitive. Boys basically do not like small group work. If you put boys in a small group, they'll probably spend half their time trying to figure out who's going to be the leader. It's just that high, high competition that you have with boys. However, boys do like large groups. They like the football teams, the soccer teams, the basketball teams, large groups. Females, on the other hand, tend to like small group work. They have a much greater esprit de corps with other females or even males than males do. They don't spend a lot of time on administrative tasks, and they form friendships much more easily than boys do. Boys tend to stand off a little bit when it comes to friendships, and part of that is that competition, because if you become a good friend with someone, how do you then turn around and compete with that person? Boys are also hardwired to not seek help. Girls, on the other hand, tend to be very relaxed and have no problem sharing their distress whenever it occurs. For example, your son comes home from school. Matthew, how was your day? Fine. Well, you sure you look a little upset? You want to talk about it? No. You sure you don't want to talk about it? You might feel better. Fine, Mom, I'm fine. And where does he go? He goes to his room and closes the door. Your daughter comes home from school. Sarah, how was your day? Mama, you won't believe what they did to me. Yeah, and you should be here, you should pick her up, you love her, you kiss her bobos, and all is right with the world. But what makes that important, there's a study done with moms and dads with infants. And what they found, when female infants cried, they were much more likely to be picked up, to be coddled. Oh, does your tummy hurt? You know, that kind of stuff. When male infants cried, they were much more likely to be given food or a toy as a distractor. This says perhaps as a culture, we're uncomfortable with male tears, even in infancy. Guys tend to support their intuition with evidence and logic that's a real driving force for boys. They're also very slow to process emotional information. They actually did a study in which they measured how much longer it took males to process emotional information than females. And they'd be surprised to find out that it took males 5 hours longer. Which means, ladies out there in the audience, when your husband doesn't get it, give him a day, he'll figure it out. Boys are very slow to process emotional information. Now, why is that important in school? When you have a boy who's upset, when you have a boy who has been sent to the office, he's angry about something, a confrontation on the bus, whatever, a boy has to have processing time. If you push him, he will get angry or he will just shut down. Boys have to have that processing time. And there's a biological reason for that. In the male brain, emotions are housed in the amygdala portion of the brain, which is at the back of the brain. But they are actually processed by the cerebral cortex, which is the front of the brain. So there's a greater distance for those emotions to travel from the amygdala to the cerebral cortex for processing. In the female brain, however, emotions are a part of every part of your brain. So there's less distance then for the emotions to travel in the female brain. It also adds to the underscoring why females are much more intuitive, why they respond on a feeling level much more quickly than guys do. A big difference in the male and female brain is a portion of the brain that's called the corpus callosum. The corpus callosum is the bridge portion of the brain which connects the left and right hemispheres of the brain. And in the female brain, that corpus callosum is approximately 25% larger than it is in the male brain. I often describe this as kind of a freeway system, and if you look in the female brain, it's kind of like an 8-lane freeway in Los Angeles and everyone is speeding. And if you look in the male brain, it's like a 2-lane highway in Indiana and a tractor load of hay just pulled out in front of you. What makes that corpus callosum so important is the female brain is designed, because of that corpus callosum, to be a multitasker. Females are much better multitasking than males are. Males tend to do one thing at a time. They don't shift gears quickly. If you look at that in a classroom, you can have a group of kids working on something and you say, okay, class, I know you're not done with this, but I need for you to set that aside, get out your books, and turn to page 47. Girls typically will do that. Boys, you're going to find yourself going back there. Now, Freddie, put that away, get out your book. They just don't let go. And that's because of that corpus callosum, and it affects multitasking. Guys tend to do one thing at a time. Girls tend to be much more, they're much better judges of character typically than boys are. Boys can make very bad choices whenever it comes to getting in with someone else. I always encourage moms to trust their gut when it comes to, if you're concerned about someone your son is hanging around with, trust your gut, you're probably right. You're much better at that than dads are. One of the big issues with boys want things to be very logical. They look for proof, and more proof. Girls, on the other hand, trust explanations without yards and yards of logic. and they are very intuitive. The one area where females tend not to trust their intuition quite as much is in the area of mathematics, where they tend to prefer more concrete experiences. Guys can make very wide leaps in abstract concepts, and a real strength in the male brain is in spatial relationships. Guys are very, very spatial. Guys typically can see a football playing on a chalkboard, watch it being played out on the field, and see that. Look at the number of males who use blueprints in their work versus females. The number of male architects versus female architects. The male brain is just very, very spatial. Females tend not to be, that doesn't tend to be a strength of theirs. In fact, the very first part of the female brain to develop is that part that deals with language. And in the male brain, that's the last part of the brain to develop. And the first part for males is spatial relationships, but the last part for females is spatial relationships. What we have to do in classrooms to kind of capitalize on that is take advantage of that spatial relationship. For example, if you're going to have a step sheet that you want kids to follow, if you will turn that into a flow chart, boys are much more likely to engage in it. Here's a circle, step one, draw an arrow, here's a box, step two. Just make it into a flow chart. Boys are much more likely to engage in that. If you just write words, boys tend to disengage in that. Boys also are not very, boys tend to use much more abstract language than girls do. Girls tend to use more everyday language. It tends to be a little bit more precise. One of the theories is that one of the reasons why legal journals and medical journals are so difficult to understand is the majority of the authors of those are males. And had females written them, they'd be more succinct, more to the point. Because the corpus callosum is smaller in the male brain and he's not a good multitasker, there are some trade-offs. He's better at symbolics, and he's better at diagrams and abstracts rather than emotional information. That whole basis of symbolics and diagrams is one of the reasons why when you, those of you who are familiar with Dr. Payne's work on mental models, that's why they're so significant for boys. Boys tend to be highly figural. And if you do the drawing of vocabulary words, whatever, the comic strip things that we talk about in some of those, it very much aligns with the male brain. Girls, on the other hand, tend to read more, they write more, they read and write better than boys on average, and they develop their verbal skills at least 1 year ahead of boys. And of all the things that I'm talking about here, that's probably one of the most significant things when it comes to boys. The three most significant grade levels for a boy are K-1 and 2. What the research shows is when boys struggle in reading and writing in K-1 and 2, even though they may catch up by grade 3, they forever form negative attitudes about reading and writing that tend to never go away. And they forever dislike that. Girls are highly verbal, and it happens at a very young age. Now, add to that, that when you have those five-year-olds who come to school, what we do, we don't care if your birthday was that last day right before the start date. Let's say that you have to be five on or before September 1. But you're going to have the boy in that classroom that was born on September 2nd, and you're going to have the boy in there that has a birthday of August 29th. There's a huge difference when you look at boys, there's 11 months difference in age, developmentally. And yet when we put them in the classroom, we expect them to do the same task. And developmentally, you have a lot of boys who just aren't ready. Add to that, that what we have done in education over the last 25 years is we have pushed the curriculum and our expectations further and further down. What we used to do in first grade, we now do in kindergarten. We expect kids to do formal reading and writing very early today. And for some of your boys, they're just not ready. Add to that, that you have a boy who comes out of poverty, where language is a deprivation rather than a strong asset. So those boys kind of come with a double whammy upstart. They're already lacking language, then we have feedback, we have these high expectations. I think in education we would be well advised to pull back and really look at how we're spending our interventions, especially at the elementary level. We spend a lot of time offering programs, tutoring programs, mentoring programs for those upper elementary grades where we do a lot of our state competency testing, and that's all fine and good. But where we really need to have some strong tutoring, some extra help, is for our boys down there at K-1 and 2, because that's such an important foundational piece. And we need to put our resources down there, and if we did that, I think we would avoid some of the problems that we have in the upper elementary grades, trying to get kids proficient in a lot of things. I think you also will look at girls mature much more quickly than guys, and knowing that this is probably a large female audience out there because you are educators, and that's predominantly a female-dominated workforce, I think if you really think about it, there's a significant difference between the maturity level of a 17-year-old girl and a 17-year-old boy. There's a significant maturity level difference between a 21-year-old girl and a 21-year-old boy. Boys are much slower to develop that maturity. What we find in the research is most boys don't really hit that maturity level until around the ages of 24, 25. And if you think about it, that's where you're going to hear most boys use phrases like, well, I think it's time for me to settle down. That's when a lot of boys begin to think about marriage and family and careers and retirement programs, all that stuff. It's really 25 plus. Girls tend to start that much earlier than boys do. Boys also prefer logic and problem solving rather than long narratives. And what makes that important is that 85% of the public school workforce is female. In the elementary schools in this country, 95% of the workforce is female. And as a gender group, ladies, I'm sorry, but you use way too many words. Boys want you to get to the point. How many times has your husband said to you, is there a point to this? It's what I call that glazed over look that you see on boys' faces. What actually happens in the male brain goes through numerous rest states a day. It actually shuts down. What that's really about is when the brain shuts down, it's kind of absorbed all the language it can process. And so you see that glazed over look on boys' faces. It's kind of like your computer that locks up, and then you have to do a Control-Alt-Delete. And basically, that's what the male brain's doing. It's recharging. It's trying to reboot. And there's some ways you can help boys do that. When you see that glazed over look on a boy's face, try and get a little closer to him, just proximity. Gently put your hand on the back of his chair or on his shoulder if he's touchable. Stop talking, ask him a question, so it goes from an input to an output. Or four, ask him to physically do something. Just get up and move. What makes that glazed over look, that rest state thing, so important in schools is typically what you will see down there in the lower grades. You know, bright little boy, very pleasant, has a hard time paying attention. First grade, same thing. By second or third grade, someone is suggesting attention deficit disorder. And we end up with a disproportionate number of boys labeled ADD and ADHD. What the research shows is with five-year-old boys, for every minute of talk, he has to have a physical activity of some sort. So that would mean that if you're going to talk for 10 minutes, then the boy has to have 10 minutes of movement. And I can promise you that is not happening in schools in this country. Boys, basically, if you think of the brain as a house, The female brain has multiple rooms in the house. There are no doors on any of the rooms. You can roam from room to room. And that wiring that connects all of those rooms, that's called emotions. They're a part of every room in the house. Boys, on the other hand, every room has a very specific purpose. And every room has a door. The male brain is highly specialized. And emotions are housed in a separate room. The door is shut. Typically, it is locked, and he can't find the key. That's what boys do. When we talk about just some things you can do in a classroom, and I'm going to talk about a few of these, and then I'm going to stop and give an opportunity for questions, and then I'll come back and give some more concrete things. Anytime you're using a visual, whether that's through an overhead projector, any LCD, whatever your projection device is, make sure you can include a verbal with it. Make things as multi-sensory as possible for boys. Include movement as much as you can. Movement makes things physically concrete. Movement makes memory. Memory makes learning. That's one of the reasons why music is such an asset in the elementary schools, especially for boys, because it usually involves movement as well as sound. Incorporate the use of manipulators wherever you can. Have boys work in pairs instead of small groups. And if you're going to have boys work in pairs, make sure you put a boy with another boy. If you put a boy with a girl, he'll make the girl do all the work, especially if reading and writing are involved. So try and get boys working in pairs. Include competition and the need to win wherever you can. Make it into a game. Boys are competitive. They are competitive by nature. And so anytime you can kind of keep a score, then typically you have boys who engage in that. In the primary grades, I encourage teachers to have all-boy reading groups. If you put boys with boys, typically they take greater risks in reading. They don't compare themselves to girls, and they try harder. Put girls in the group, and they automatically assume the girl is better than they are, and boys tend to hold back. Conversely, if you'll put girls with girls in mathematics, girls try harder, they're more competitive, and they're much more confident. Allow boys to play with Nerf balls while reading. Let them fiddle with something. If you recall when some of your children were young, you could be reading a book to a 2 or 3 year old boy, and it's not uncommon that he's also playing with a car while doing that. The girls tend to be much more likely to curl up in your lap and be cuddled and enjoy that reading experience. Boys want to do something while doing that. So if we can incorporate that in the classroom, typically that will help. If you're going to praise a boy in the classroom, compliment him on his work or whatever, especially as he reaches adolescence, middle school, high school, like I said, about third grade and up. Anytime you do that, try and do it privately. There are some group ways you can praise a boy in a group setting. One is the high five. Another is the what I call the guy punch, where you take your fist and gently give him a little poke on the arm. Another is the two fists meeting. It's the taking a hand and going, yes, that kind of stuff. And kind of the rule of thumb on that is any time you praise a boy, if you can praise him in a way that denotes strength, typically boys respond to that. It's about strength. When you do things like, oh, I'm just so proud of you, you did such a great job, that's, boys typically do not respond positively to that. Because the minute they got out in the hall, someone's going to go, oh, teacher's pet, kissing daddy, and, you know, it just adds to shame. So try and avoid that. One-on-one, you can say just about anything to a boy. He will accept your praise. But when his peer groups are around, that's another issue. Allow boys more physical space. Boys need twice their body width. They tend to wriggle. They tend to squirm. So give them more space. If you don't do that, they're going to spend half their time. You're going to spend half your time. Patrick, get off your knees. Sit on your bottom. You know, all that yeah, yeah stuff. In the primary grades where teachers sit kids on the floor, I encourage them to make that circle bigger. Use masking tape to create some boundaries. This is your space. As you reach the upper grades, try to have an area in the back of the room where there's a desk, maybe some areas taped off. And if you need to go back there and stand up and read, that's where you go. You want to stand up and lean over and write that paragraph while leaning over, that's where you go. You get out of that space, you go back to your seat. I'm going to stop right here for right now and see if there are any questions that you want me to address based on what I've talked about so far.
Thank you for the questions that we've received so far. The first one, Paul, would be, many of the male students that have behavioral issues have some significant histories and are victims in a sense of the environment they have been raised in. How do you provide compassion and effective discipline?
Well, boys, number one, want those parameters and those boundaries. Another is boys have to have opportunities to really talk about those. And emotions are not a strength in boys. When you say, you know, what were you thinking? What were you feeling? I don't know. And they don't know. One of the things I talk about in the Iroquois Boys in Crisis is the importance of direct teaching boys a feeling vocabulary. There's a difference between angry and being furious. There's a difference in being afraid and being terrified. There's a difference between being happy and being ecstatic. So one of the things I encourage is for teachers to develop, and principals and counselors, what I call a feeling word thesaurus. And you have to, it's very easy to incorporate that to the curriculum. It lends itself very nicely to language arts. It lends itself nicely to in social studies. What do you think Christopher Columbus was feeling when he set sail up for the new world? Do you think he was terrified? Do you think he was elated? Do you think he was apprehensive? What things make you feel that way? But we have to direct teach that vocabulary because it's not there in boys, especially those boys who come out of those environments. They're angry, and they don't know why they're angry. If a boy cannot label his emotions, he is a prisoner of his emotions. Words are absolutely crucial to liberate the mind of emotions. And for boys, you have to direct teach that.
So I think this one falls in with that. What are the best strategies for teaching young males self-control?
Well, part of that, well, there's several things. One is through physical activities. The brain has to learn to control the body. And let me just give you an example. I would challenge you to find a student who is good in gymnastics or who is a good diver who is not also a good student academically. Because to do either one of those sports, the brain has had to learn to control the lower body. What we've done, we've cut a lot of that developmental stuff out. Boys need that experience. I think we need to be looking at some of our gross motor programs that we have in schools. We need to do things that help boys learn how to physically control themselves. You know, it used to be that's what boys learned when they went to the military, is that control. Today we have things like boot camps where we're trying to do that in schools. Boys need that physical thing. Boys need to learn impulse control. There are a lot of little ways you can do it in the classroom, and there are a lot of bigger ways you can do it. So I think it's twofold. One is systemic, and we need to look at our curriculum and ask ourselves, how are we helping kids develop physical control of their bodies to improve concentration and focus? Part of it is diet. We need caffeine out of the diet. We need sugar out of the diet for these boys. Boys need to be able to go out and run off some of their energy and then come back and be able to concentrate and focus. We need to give them some space to do that in the classroom so they're not quite so angry. So it's a combination of things that have to be done, and yet at the same time, you do have to have very clear parameters. You can't have chaos in a classroom. You can't have kids just hauling off and hitting someone because he looked at me. We can't have that. But at the same time, we have to give boys some other ways to do that.
Okay, I have two more questions for you. It seems that in the classroom, we are seeing more girls taking on aggressive, violent behaviors that in years past have been attributed to boys. Do you think this is an emerging pattern of behavior in your experience? If so, what are the possible causes and interventions?
Oh, absolutely, girls are becoming more aggressive. Absolutely. Just watch your news. It's there. It's a growing problem. Part of it is media-driven. What girls see on television today, it's about girls have to be able to take on six guys at one time, come out without a scratch. It is about, we have encouraged girls to be much more competitive to survive in a man's world. We have discouraged tears. It's movies like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, it's Charlie's Angels, it is some of the Halle Berry movies. Women have to be super women. And what's happening with a lot of females today, because of that, they're taking on many of the behaviors that we've seen with boys for a very, very long time. So, yeah, we've got to get really concerned about that, really concerned. Because it is increasing. It is becoming, girls can be vicious. Not only are they physically more aggressive, when you add to it that emotions are part of every part of the female brain, when females get angry with someone, when they get angry with other girls, they can be very vindictive, very vicious. Boys, on the other hand, the one plus side of them, when they get angry, they may blow up, but then typically it's over. Girls, it tends to linger much longer. You're seeing what we had here about 6 months ago, where there were eight girls who ganged up on another girl in a motel room. I was in a town here a year or so ago where three 12 and 13-year-old girls put gasoline on a horse and struck it on fire. So you have those kinds of things happening with females. And I think we have to begin to talk about some of the same things with girls that we're talking now with boys, because they're taking on many of those same behaviors.
Okay, so the last question, do you have any suggestions or examples of alternative suspension programs that work? What do you feel are the key components?
Well, I just, putting the kid out is not getting the job done. I really think we've got to get really serious about providing some psychological services for some of our young kids. They have a lot of issues, they have a lot of problems, and they don't know how to work through those. And that is a skill. And we have to give them that support. Unfortunately, that whole part of our budgets we tend to cut out. So I think we have to get involved in that. The other thing, and probably the thing that we could do much better, we need to bring good mentors in the schools to work with our boys. I have an assistant principal that I've worked with over the last few years who's done just a marvelous job of doing that. He identified some boys who had some real issues. He purposely recruited a male who would be willing to donate 15 minutes per week to that one boy, come to the school and do something with that boy, not tutor him, just go for a walk, go out, pitch a ball, whatever. And what happened in that process, those boys began to bond with that other male. And he became the confidant. The mentor also found himself going, here's my cell phone number. If you need me, call me. He might call about a homework. I had this problem. He becomes that external support system. And you have a lot of boys who lack that. They don't have the male role models in the home. When they come to school, they get in all kinds of trouble. They don't know what to do with that. They feel like they're battling the system all by themselves. And having a male mentor, somebody to talk to and work through that, who's not giving you a grade, who's not going to kick you out of school, who's not going to hit you, is a very, very powerful thing. And I really think we need to be out there really beating the bushes to find those. And there are people who are willing to do that. There are a lot of businesses out there that one of the criteria for working in that company is that you must be willing to do community service. So we need to do that. And I think if you look for a lot of your boys, a lot of boys have found that in sports. They have found it when they bond with a coach. It's that guy thing. Unfortunately, we don't have it soon enough. We can't wait until high school sports or middle school sports to do some of that intervention. We need to get that much sooner. So I think we really need to be recruiting those mentors for those boys.
Okay, so remember, if you want to ask Paul a question, send that to questions@ahaprocess.com.
Another key thing for boys is because anger is an emotion, a default emotion for boys, I really, really would encourage you to encourage boys and girls to drink water. What that is about is basically this. There's a stress hormone called cortisol. When we get stressed, when we get angry, when we get highly excited, then cortisol is emitted in the brain. The brain is 85% water. Cortisol contaminates the water in the brain. If you can get a boy to drink water, within 5 minutes, it begins to dilute the cortisol in the brain, and it has a calming effect on the boy. So water becomes a very critical part. Also, if you have the boy drink that water at room temperature, he won't have to go to the bathroom as quickly. Cold water goes through the body at a faster rate. One group that I really encourage to have those small bottles of water readily available is with kids who are in some of those special needs classes, those kids who are really explosive, really try to get them to drink water on an ongoing basis. I also encourage schools about 2 weeks prior to state competency testing is have a school-wide campaign on the importance of drinking water. And with kids, you can just tell them how their brain works and say, you know, if you're calm, you're going to think better. When you're stressed, you can't clear your head, you're not going to think as well. We have a lot of kids today who really suffer from test anxiety, even at a very young age, because it's high-stakes testing. So try and get them to drink that water. The inner ear of the male is also different than females. Males do not hear like females hear. I'm sure many of you ladies out there are constantly telling your husbands to turn down the TV. Males have it louder than females. If you're a soft-spoken teacher, make sure you get those boys close to you. Look them in the eye and make sure that you have their attention. Male voices is much easier for males to pick up on than female voices. And then add to that, of course, that more words are being used, then that just compounds it. The visual cortex is different in males than females. Males typically like more light than females do. Many of you ladies prefer having lamps on in your house and your husband comes in and flips on the overhead light. Males like light. They're also overstimulated by what I call visual pollution. If you have a lot of stuff on your walls in your classroom, especially if you make use of primary colors, reds, greens, yellows, blues, it becomes a visual stimulant for boys. I encourage teachers to make sure that what you put on the wall is very organized and orderly. Remember, spatial relationships is a strength in the male brain. So if you're going to put up student work, visualize that in a picture frame and put it in an area. Create some white space. Over here is going to be some instructional stuff. Visualize that in a picture frame. Make sure there's a very distinct pattern to it. When you just throw stuff up on the wall and you got a lot of stuff up there, it's a stimulant for boys. They don't have a focal point in that. And they're looking for that because spatial relationships is a strength in the male brain. The retina of the male is also different than females. Males do not see color the same way as females do. The typically you will find that if you look at young children's drawings, girls will use red, green, yellows, blues, they'll use pastels, they draw mommy, daddy, puppy, smoke coming out of a chimney, here's sunshine, here's a rainbow. And boys, on the other hand, they use the colors black, brown, gray, and navy. And then they throw in a splash of blood. They just do. They draw daggers and monsters and robots and trucks. That's just what they do. And it's not a pathology to be concerned about. Boys tend to do that. If you look at male and female fashion, you see the same thing. Go buy a man a suit. Black, brown, gray, navy. Those are basically your choices. Females, on the other hand, you have an array of color. You have shades of color. Guys are less likely to have that. Boys are going to wiggle. They're going to tap their pencils. They're going to thump their fingers. They're going to use their desk as a bongo drum. Boys tend to do much more than girls. They just do. I'll remind people, if you'll think about when Johnny Carson was alive, if you recall him, he was forever fiddling with a pencil. He would tap it on a coffee cup, he'd toss it in the air, he'd twirl it in his fingers, and that's very much a boy behavior. A lot of those boys, these young men, they play with coins in their pocket, they play with car keys. They tap their foot in a meeting, they can't sit still. One of the ways that seems to help a little bit, instead of always saying, stop that, stop that, stop that, just let the boy know, I know you have a need to move. Now let's talk about how you can do that, how you can take care of your need to move without disturbing everyone else. So you're talking about, you know, if you tap that pencil on the thigh of your leg, it's not going to disturb everyone else. When you used to sleep in those sponge rollers, those little pink sponge rollers, and I think they still sell those at dollar stores, only they're pink, blue, and yellow, all kinds of colors. If you go buy those, if you take that sponge off, it fits on a pencil. And you tell the boy, put that on your pencil, he taps that, it doesn't make the same noise as it does without that sponge. You can also say it's going to keep that callus from building up on your finger. So that's another thing you can do. Strip some Velcro underneath the desk. Not that you don't put it where they can rip it, because that is going to drive you nuts, but just a piece of that Velcro. Boys will sit there and feel that and play with it while it's on under the edge of their desk. Boys who do it all the time, put butcher paper on it. Here, look, just think of yourself as the Italian restaurant. Here's your butcher paper and crayons. Boys will doodle. Something pops in your head, jot it down. And just because they're doodling does not mean they're not listening. Boys do that. If you have a concern about whether or not they're really listening, stop talking and ask them a question. Find out if they're really doing that. Let me stop because we're getting kind of going to be pressed for time here, and see if you have some additional questions.
We don't have any additional questions.
Okay. Let me talk about one thing here that I usually get asked, and that is about single gender preference. There's a body of research out there that is very supportive of single gendered classrooms. There's also a body of research that strongly supports single gendered schools. What they found in single gendered schools, and Australia's done a lot of work with this, what they found in single-gendered schools is that boys try a lot more stuff, and so do girls. They both thrive. For girls in single-gendered schools, they take more rigorous math courses. They become, girls tend to put less emphasis on physical appearance. They have found that in single-gendered schools, the girl who's not as attractive or maybe a little overweight doesn't experience the ridicule that she does in a co-ed school. In co-ed schools, those girls can be very ostracized sometimes. Other girls can be very vindictive. Girls put a lot of emphasis on physical appearance. For boys, plays in an all-boys school, they tend to also be much more likely to participate in choir and drama and some of those courses that they typically label as girl courses in a co-ed environment. What the research has shown that when you put boys with boys and you have a teacher, doesn't matter if it's a male or female teacher, but if you have a teacher who really understands boys and how they learn, then they thrive in those classrooms. I had the opportunity to visit one of those schools in Florida, where it was a relatively small elementary school and kind of out of town. But they put together an all-boy classroom, and this was their first year in doing that. And they, in order to get the boys and the parents who were willing to have their boys in an all-boy class, they had put two grade levels together. I think it was third and fourth or fourth and fifth. I can't remember which. But anyway, I was talking with the teacher who was teaching these boys, and I said, well, how did the boys respond whenever they discovered there were no girls in the class? She said, you know, it was really interesting. She said, we went into the third week of school. Not one boy had ever mentioned anything about it. So finally, she said, I just said, hey, guys, what do you see different in this classroom from classroom you've been in, you've had in the past? She said she got no response. She said, guys, there are no girls in this classroom. And they're like, oh, yeah. The boys were totally oblivious that the girls weren't even there. They were too much into their own thing, boys being boys, horsing around, and those kinds of things. And the teacher understood that. She created opportunities for it. She didn't fight it. She kind of made it work for her. And those are typically the kinds of things we have to begin to do to help boys adjust and help make a boys, make a classroom more boy-friendly. Any questions lingering out there?
We don't have any additional questions in email.
Okay, well, I appreciate very much your interest in this topic. If you have not accessed Hero Cry Boys in Crisis, you might want to do that by going to the ahaprocess.com website. And I would really encourage you to pull back, look at your classrooms, look at some of the issues, and ask yourself, how can I make this align a little bit closer to the male brain? What you're going to find for your females are much more adaptable than many of your males. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Paul, and thanks all of you for your participation. We have a special promotion for those of you on this call. If you would book the workshop, Boys in Crisis, Hear Our Cry, Boys in Crisis, we have in the next 7 days, you would receive a $300 value in the Hear Our Cry, Boys in Crisis books for your teachers. Now, I want you to mark your calendar. Our next complimentary teleseminar is scheduled for Wednesday, June 10th. The guest speaker will be Ruben Perez, and his topic will be Bridging the Language and Cultural Gap, Working with Spanish-Speaking Parents. And you should receive registration for this teleseminar in the next 2 weeks, so watch your inbox. So we thank you all for participating.
You also put your work at, make sure some principals out there or counselors. We also have a DVD for parents of boys that your school can buy a site license, and it gives you an opportunity to reproduce that DVD and actually give it to parents. It is 4 20-minute segments, and it is it was filmed before a parent audience and has a Q&A session that goes with it. And it's a tool that you have, and it also can be used in parent training. And if you go to the website, you can also download a study guide that goes with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for your participation.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.